Hello, this is Darren, and welcome to another episode of The Criterionist, a look at the Criterion Collection, one spine number at a time. This is episode 37, so we're going to take a look at spine number 37, and that is Terry Gilliam's 1981 film Time Bandits. Just so you know, this is a podcast where I will spoil anything and everything, so just be warned, go watch the film before you listen, or just listen with caution. So with that out of the way, let's get into this film. This film opens in just a modern day home, two parents and a kid named Kevin, except the parents don't really like this kid, it seems. They don't even care. Very exaggerated. Like, they just ignore what he say and yell at him when they feel interrupted. So then, one night, a knight crashes on a horse through his, like, bookshelf or his closet and just rides off. And then he wakes up and the dad says, "What was that noise?" And so you think, is it real or not? So Kevin gets his camera and then these dwarves the next night come in and are running from this like big head. So Kevin runs away too. So it does seem real, but I'll get into what I think it means later, if it is real or not. This is a very strange movie. But yeah, I'll get into that. And then they have these weird little adventures. They meet Napoleon and steal his things, these dwarves and Kevin, and then they go to meet Robin Hood, who gives away his things, Robin, played by John Cleese. Terry Gilliam is part of the Monty Python, so is John Cleese, so it's kind of a reunion. Eric Idle's in here too, in like little cameos, with some lady. Not sure who the lady is, but yeah, Eric Idle is there as well. I think it's Eric Idle. But, yeah, they meet Robin Hood, who, like, gives away his stuff because Robin Hood takes from the rich and gives to the poor. Then they meet, what's his name? The King Agamemnon? I think that's how you say it. But he kind of becomes, like, a father figure to Kevin. Kind of at old Roman times. Kevin falls from the time bandits can travel through time, and Kevin like falls in a different door and falls onto a minotaur who's about to kill the king, played by Sean Connery. And so this Sean Connery's king character takes him in as his own, and that's until the dwarves kidnap Kevin back. Kevin doesn't want to go. So after that one, they're on the Titanic, which is pretty funny. All the dwarves are then in tuxedos. Before that, they're just in like raggedy old, like old time clothes. But now they're in tuxes. This scene's funny, but I don't know what it has to do with the rest of the film, honestly. They're all drinking, the dwarves, and this one says, "Can I get a little more ice?" And then they hit the iceberg, and it starts to go down. They're in the middle of the ocean. This is when a character we've seen a little bit of, Evil, I think is what his name is. He's kind of watching the dwarves in the his cauldron, not his coffin. Kind of like a witch would stare into a cauldron full of water and see the reflection. He sees that, and by this time he's like, okay, I'll manipulate where they go now through time, and kind of sends them to like his realm, his time period. So they get captured on this boat, and I think they're about to be killed, and that's when it's revealed, like, the boat is like a hat for a giant. I'm not sure. They do something to get his hat off. Takes his hat off and they just start walking. They reach this invisible barrier where they don't know what to do. It's just invisible barrier they can't see. One of the dwarves looks on his map and sees that his map that doesn't make any sense because it's like through time realms and time barriers. It's very doesn't make any sense. But he sees on his map that they're there. They're where the treasure is, the treasure they've been looking for this whole film. Then they said no. The rest say no, it's not here. They get into a conflict, which ends up in the main guy, the main dwarf, don't know his name, throwing something and then just breaking the invisible barrier to reveal like a big castle. And there they go. That's where the treasure is. Let's go get it. This is when they get captured by what looks to be like a game show host, like saying, "Come over here and see what your prize is." Kevin's like, "Wait a minute." Like, the two people with the game show host giving out the prize are my parents. This is a trap. No one listens because they are greedy and want the treasure, and they get trapped in a cage. Kind of like a, not like a bird cage, but it's hanging. The abyss is just nothingness. And so they're kind of, it's a good trap, I think, but they go, one dwarf climbs up and cuts rope enough. They tie the rope together. There's a big rope holding this cage. He cuts off most of it, and they tie it together. He cuts off enough to where it's just like one little string holding in the middle, kind of like how you eat an apple and you just have the core left. Just the core of the rope is left and barely holding. It seems like a joke. It doesn't. I don't know, the jokes don't really work for me. I'll get into that later though. Then they get to safety slowly but surely, and then these time band they're the time bandits, I guess, and Kevin has to convince them to stop evil once and for all, because these guys aren't great, but they're good guys, but just a life of being a bandit can make you a little selfish. But Kevin says no, we have to stop evil, then there'll be no more evil. So they go and battle him. They're about to die. That's when this weird fig this big-headed god figure from the beginning comes and saves them. Then he's like a human, and he's like, I hate showing up like that. But it does stop evil. I think freezes him, like turns him to stone. Not freezes him, but kind of like Medusa. But this other guy's on the good side. I'm not sure. That's when God tells the dwarves to put evil in this box, and he'll be trapped in there for good. God hires the dwarves back, I think, and then evil gets dropped and a part of him falls off and goes under something. That's when Kevin is left behind. Smoke starts to come from evil, the little chunk of evil that fell off. Then that's when Kevin wakes up and he's very confused. He looks around. And he's back in his room, but there's a fire. That's when the firemen come save him. The parents are there. They're like, "Did you get the microwave? Oh my gosh, did you get the microwave?" Not caring about their kid again, only caring about their things, being selfish. But then the microwave comes out, and they say, "The microwave caused the fire." The firemen do. And they're like, we didn't put anything in it. This is one of the weirdest endings ever. I don't get it. But yeah, they open the microwave. They see it looks just like the chunk of evil. Kevin's like, wait, mom, dad, don't touch that. They touch it and they just disappear. They just blow into smoke. That's when Sean Connery is back playing the fireman. He kind of gives a wink to Kevin there, like all of it was real and it wasn't a dream. Kevin looks at his pictures. He took pictures in the Roman times or the Greek times. I'm not sure. But he looks in there. It was real. And then that's when the movie ends. Just a strange, weird, confusing ending. But yeah, let's get into some themes. I could say one of the themes in this film is cynical towards bad parents, but I think what it's really trying to say is it's kind of a positive look about getting lost in books and stories. Kevin is like, oh my gosh, I can't believe, I think he's like researching some history or something. He's like, wow, I can't believe this happened. And no one responds to him in his household. Neither of his parents even care to respond. But Kevin obviously loves books and stories. And that may be a result of bad parents. I feel like Terry Gilliam just had neglectful parents, or he felt like he had just parents that didn't care about him, so he turned to books and stories and obviously films and comedy, and he's a filmmaker. He was in Monty Python, cares a lot about that stuff, and Monty Python is a very smart group, so they're very well read, they're very intelligent, book smart, so clearly that's what he's like, and probably because of his childhood. This story seems very personal. And then of course Kevin just getting lost literally in all these tales. There's Robin Hood, who's silly and kind of dumb, but very very kind, even kind of narcissistic at times. There's the king, who claims he killed this animal when he was kind of a coward and about to die. So just these weird tales about people being human but still being heroes, and which are better than his parents, just these heroes that aren't perfect, and that's the best kind of hero, the one that you can still judge a little. Not judge, but like look at them and say they're not the best person, but still they're incredible. And then, he's on the Titanic, which I'm not sure why, just for them to get lost at sea so they can be lured in by evil. Again, evil, a big theme in a lot of tales. You have to defeat evil to finish the story, to conquer the get the conclusion of the story, I guess. So this story just has evil in it. It's much like a book put on the film, I guess. We have the time bandits who are just they all have their different characteristics, much like each story has different characteristics. It's an interesting theme, but I guess I'll get into what I did not like about this film, or what I thought about the film, I guess, which is I didn't like it very much. I don't know. It seems to be trying way too hard, doing too much stuff. I get that it's a personal story, about neglectful parents and the substitution for parents that books can have, or movies can have, or stories in general can have. But I don't know. I just cannot connect with this film. This is my second time viewing it, and I feel just the same about it. I feel like it's well made, but it's just not very good, in my opinion. People seem to love it. think it's amazing, but I just cannot get into this film. I think with most Terry Gilliam things, which I find I can't get into any of his films. I like Monty Python, but that's not really his. But yeah, the sets are amazing. They go all out with the sets. Even just like a boat, the hat, like someone made a hat for a big guy to wear. And so with all of his films, I give him that. The sets are incredible, and that's not something to be put down, or that's not a, even though I don't like the film, you have to mention the sets are amazing. The acting is fine, but people don't, it's so fast and I guess episodic that the actors who are all good actors don't really get their chance when it comes to giving a great performance. Sean Connery is a delight in this film. John Cleese is hilarious, but I don't know. The dwarves are fine, but they're too just characteristic. They're too much like characters, like cliche characters that I don't really connect with them. Kevin, I connect with a little bit, being a kid, just lost, trying to find his way home, kind of, but enjoying the fun he's having. I don't know, every kid kind of seems that way. Just a little lost, but always having fun. So, yeah, and the kid does very good. Child actors are hard to find. This kid's good. Yeah, not much else to say about it, except not my favorite. A well-made film that I just cannot connect with. Yeah, so I guess that's it. You can follow me on Twitter at The Criterionist. Listen to my other podcast, The Rosebuds. This week we'll be doing Star Wars. Last week we did WALL-E. So look out for those two. I have a lot of fun. So go listen to that, The Rosebuds. You can find it on iTunes. You can find this on iTunes. Give that podcast and this podcast a review. Positive or negative, I don't care. Just tell me what you think. I would love some feedback. If you want to give some more feedback, email me at darincriterion14@yahoo.com. That's Darin. Criterion number one, number four at yahoo.com. And yeah, I'll read those next week. Is Branded to Kill, which is a good film, and I can't wait to talk about it. So thank you for listening. Goodbye.